All right, are we ready?
I mean, I'm here.
Wow, that's all it takes.
Here and ready. That's too good.
Hello there, ladies and gentlemen, friends and rivals. My name is Jared, and with me is my trickery friend, Ian.
That's me.
We will be your hosts for the podcast. We are honored and grateful that you have joined us at our table. Here at the Game Table Podcast, we take a look at various board, card, and other tabletop games. We give an overview, provide a little insight on how to play, and share some of our thoughts, all in an attempt to give you an idea of how well it would fit for you and your table. Today, we will be looking at Cat in the Box
Deluxe Edition.
Yes.
Designed by Munayuki Yokochi, artwork by Osamu Inoue, and published by Bezier Games.
Cat in the Box is a 2-5 player trick-taking game where players are experimenting with cats in boxes, I think. And if you fail the experiment, you create a paradox of the ages. Players will be playing cards and declaring colors as they play them, but each number can only be played once in each color. And if you are unable to play a card, you start the paradox. Players will continue playing tricks for as many rounds as there are players. Whoever has the most points combined at the end of all these rounds will become the greatest experimenter of cats. I don't know. They will win the game. Join us as we review Cat in the Box.
All right, Ian.
Oh, man.
What is your favorite Tim Burton movie?
Oh, no. Man.
And we're not saying the best Tim Burton movie. We're just saying your favorite.
This is so hard. Let's see. Hold on. Did he do Batman? Did he do it
yes,
with Michael Keaton?
He did do that, yes.
Oh, okay. That would take it.
I figured that was going to be your answer.
Okay, yeah. I would say the original Batman with Michael Keaton, that would probably be, Yeah, so then I feel like that in The Nightmare Before Christmas for me has come a long way for me in my mind. I didn't think I used to like it. And then I watch it every year now, and I love it. I don't know. There's something about it. So I don't know. But yeah, I mean, it's such good movies. Yeah, I would say that. What you got?
Okay, so full like cards on the table. I fully expected you to pick both of those. I love both of those movies. They're fantastic fun.
Yeah.
And I think they're great picks, but I chose to go a different direction so that we could kind of have some different options on the table. I have several here. It was kind of interesting this week going back through his list and being like, oh, I actually forgot about this movie, but I really enjoyed it at the time.
Right.
So one for me that was really weird that I really liked was Tim Burton's Corpse Bride. I really enjoyed that movie. I remember it coming out and just being like, all right, I'll check it out because it's Tim Burton. It was really fun. I really enjoyed it. I don't know if you've gotten a chance to see that one.
No, but, I have not.
Well, so it's like this animated, it's got that animated style that he does, which yep. I think he's got one of my favorite animation styles as well. But no, it was just really cute. So I really liked it. It was kind of aimed towards kids, like on paper at least. And then another one for me, I mean, everybody likes Beetlejuice, right? Like classic. Yeah. And I remember, so Edward Scissorhands really threw me for a loop. We had to watch that in college for a media class. I really like wrestled with that movie for a while. Like it was really good, but also it I don't know. There was just something about it that really threw me. But I really enjoyed wrestling with that movie. And then I don't care what anybody says. Tim Burton has the best Charlie and Chocolate Factory. And
that one's good.
I don't understand why Alice in Wonderland gets so much hate. I love that movie. That movie's awesome. And all I hear is everyone hates it. And I'm like, why? That movie's awesome.
I haven't seen it to know. I've seen bits and pieces. It wasn't something I ever watched in theaters, but yeah, I mean, the theatrics look incredible. So I will say that is definitely well done.
I feel like Tim Burton was made to make Alice in Wonderland, and he did a great job with it, in my humble opinion.
For sure. For sure.
So, yep, those are some of my shout outs. As usual, I couldn't pick just one, but you know, that's how it goes.
Yeah, those are all good. And the reason, Jared, why are we mentioning Tim Burton?
Well, Ian, I believe at Funkytown this past weekend, or two weekends ago, we decided that Bezier Games is essentially the Tim Burton of board games. And we mean that with the highest of compliments.
Yes. That is no slight.
None.
That is all praise. They have their unique style, and it's kind of got this kind of dark undertones, but like light theatrics and fun and just a great games. Always something, a solid game from Bezier. Right.
And just like Tim Burton, they are who they are. They don't try to stray away and be something that they're not. They do what they want to do. And I appreciate that.
Exactly. Exactly.
All right.
Now I do have a cat fact.
Cat fact.
Oh,
who are you? Because we are talking about Cats in a Box, even though the theme is very much it's underlying when we're talking about this game. But we got to have a cat fact. Well, I guess I have a question first. Jared, do you like cats?
Cats are fine.
Okay, they're fine. Well, I like cats, but I am allergic to cats, so it is what it is.
You're allergic to cats, but you like cats.
I grew up with cats.
Okay.
But as I've moved out of my home and in an adult now with no animals, when I go back and touch cats and stuff, I get like my eyes itch and I guess I was desensitized at home. So, but now I'm away, I can't really, if I touch cats, I have to make sure that I take an allergy pill before. So,
cat fact.
There we go.
Cats. In general, this is funny. So cats don't generally meow at other cats. That's something that they've learned due to expressing needs to humans because they've been domesticated. So in general, I think occasionally they'll meow. Usually it happens as a kitten. But in general, like an adult cat isn't out there meowing at other cats as communication. That's not how they communicate. They will, like, you know, you have the howl and the hiss and whatever at other cats. But when we think of it generally of because I owned a cat, when they would meow, you're like, oh, they're talking. Well, no, they're just begging for food or something. They're just expressing need. And so they don't do that at other cats, which is not something that I ever would have thought of. I thought that was just part of a cat. But that's just something that humans and cats' relationship has developed and evolved into, is cats being demanding and then meowing at you to get you to do something for them. So,
cat fact.
There you go.
Fascinating.
What a twisted relationship.
Yeah, I feel like it's pretty par for the course with cats, though.
It truly is.
All right.
Well, Jared, tell us about this game, please.
Well, you kind of already gave us a good appetizer for it with your little blurb earlier, so I applaud you for that.
I tried to keep it simple, but at least give it a general understanding.
That's right. Ian, do you have any experience with trick-taking games in your younger life?
Like some hearts and spades occasionally. There's a couple other card games that I played, but it's been a minute. So I honestly don't remember. You know, there's a couple, you know, card games out there that would be trick takers, but those would be the main ones.
Right. Okay. Yeah, we played spades pretty religiously in high school.
Mm-hmm.
When I started hanging out with Anna's family more, they're really into bridge, which is like the physics version of spades, and it's not fun. It's more of just
it's not fun.
I don't know why anyone plays that activity, but it's a thing that people do.
In general, I just don't particularly like trick-taking games.
Well, do I have a game for you?
Yeah, right? Exactly. So, very interesting.
Man, he doesn't like deck builders, he doesn't like trick-taking games, and yet here we are reviewing them.
Yeah. Well, we'll just have to see how I think about this one.
All right. Well, I start with that just in case people don't know the term trick-taking, but have played something like Spades in the past, they might have an idea. If you don't have any idea at all what a trick-taking game is, that's okay. I will give you a brief overview here, and then you can go scour the internet because that will be much more productive than listening to me try to describe cards on an audio medium for how to play. With all that in mind, the winner of this game is the winner. The winner of this game is the winner. There you go.
Whoa.
They are the one who has the most points at the end of the game. The game ends after a number of rounds equal to the number of players. Each player is going to be dealt cards from a deck that consists of 5 of each number, from 1 to at least 6, maybe all the way up to 9, depending on how many people you're playing with. And you'll deal these cards out each round. And so there's also a board in the middle with 4 rows of different colors, as well as numbers 1 through 9 in each of those rows. The 4 colored rows from top to bottom are red, blue, yellow, and then green. And each player will, in addition to their cards, also have a bidding board and some tokens to mark their spots on the board as you go through the game. So, trick-taking basics. Imagine, if you will, that you're holding a deck of 52 regular standard cards. They will have cards that go from 2 all the way up to ace, and they will have 4 suits: clubs, spades, hearts, and diamonds. And so if you were to play one of your cards out of your hand, let's say it is a 7 of diamonds, just for kicks, then everyone else around the table is required to also play diamonds. Now, if you don't have a diamond, you have 2 options. You can either slough a card, and it's just a dead card for that round, or you can play a spade in spades. It might be a heart in the game of hearts. All these different things are called trump cards. So if you want to play a trump card, then you basically have said, I am out of diamonds, and I am playing this trump card, and unless someone plays a higher trump card, I will win that trick. What is a trick, you ask? Well, a trick is the collection of the cards for that particular hand. So once there's 4 players, everybody puts in 1 card. Whoever has the highest card, if it's in suit, then they will get it. If there's a trump card, the person who played the trump will get it. I hope that makes a little bit of sense. All right, so that's basic trick taking. In this game, there's no suits, there's colors. So you have cats that we're trying to make different colors, because like we talked about, we're doing experiments on the cats in boxes.
Right.
When you play a number, because all the cards are black with white numbering and what is it? Like a black cat with glowing white around it or something like that. It looks like there's a cat on the card.
Right.
That's what it is. But there's no color on the card technically.
No.
But you decide what color it's going to be when you play it. So if you lead, you might say, I have a green 7. And then at that point, everyone else theoretically is going to play their own green card, because what is led is what everyone else has to play. If you decide to play a green, you can play another green card. You cannot play a green 7 because there's only 1 green 7 and I've already played it. So that card's out of the game forever.
For the round, but yes.
Ian, are you tracking with me so far? Is this making any kind of sense?
It is making complete sense.
Perfect. Now, you might decide, Ian, that you don't have any greens, and then you can't have any greens for the rest of the round, ever. So at that point, you can either slough a blue or a yellow, or you could decide to trump in with the reds. Just like a normal trick-taking game, if you trump in with a red, you will win the trick unless someone else also trumps in and plays a higher red. Again, each time someone plays a card, they are going to mark that space on the board to signify that that card is out of the game for the round. Why is that important? Couple of reasons. One, we don't want to keep track of what's been played all round. But more importantly, you're trying to create clusters on this board of your particular tokens. They can go up and down, left and right, and they can zigzag, but they can't go diagonal. The reason for this is you are going to make a bid at the beginning of the round to determine how many tricks you are going to take. If you meet your bid, so let's say I said I was going to get two tricks and I, of course, nailed it and got two tricks.
Ka-ching.
Then I would also score a bonus of however many of my biggest clusters. So if I have four touching together, I would get 4 points on top of 1 point for each trick that I earned. However, there is a downside to all of this color chaos. If you get to a point in the round where you only have cards that you cannot play, whether because everyone has already taken all the sevens, or you could only play a five into the greens, but you've already told everybody that you don't have any greens. If you cannot legally play a card, you have caused a paradox.
A paradox?
A paradox.
A paradox?
The round immediately ends, and the one who caused the paradox gets negative points per trick that they gained in that round.
Ooh.
You'll go through, again, the number of rounds equal to the number of players. At the end of that last round, you'll score up all your points for all the rounds, and then the person who has the most points wins. Ian, that's my best attempt at describing a trick-taking game with zero visual. I will, as always, have a how-to-play video in the description. Please go check it out, because that will be much easier than what I just did.
There are, and I don't know if you've said this or not, but there are five cards of each number and only four spots on total board. So every card of every number is there's an extra of. So that's how this paradox basically happens almost every round. Very rarely have I seen that it doesn't happen. It can happen. Like once a game, twice a game.
I feel like in most of the games that even you and I have played, half the rounds have had paradoxes and half the rounds hadn't. So you can definitely get out of it.
You can. It's hard to do if people... I feel like the more experienced you are, the more you are focusing in on potentially causing a paradox. At least what I was experiencing. But maybe that was just a game or two. But anyway,
I assume you mean causing other people to cause a paradox, not yourself.
Yes, yes, not yourself. But you can potentially see what people are holding or you know, leaving open and try and rush into the spot in hopes that that card is in their hand. And so anyway, with that's how the paradox happens. But the one thing that I love is because, like, you are, as the game progresses, it's keeping track of what everybody's played from trick to trick. And so it's fascinating as you're putting the cubes out, you're also looking at like, okay, how do I build a collection of my little cubes so that I could score some points if I guess correct, if I hit the amount of tricks that I guessed earlier. And so there's a little bit of a game there within a game of trying to make sure you're not going over or under on that. And you're trying to hit it exactly so you can score some extra points. And so it's really interesting, a fascinating little game within a game that I just didn't think that I haven't seen before. It's very interesting.
Yeah.
So fascinating little thing there. But so Jared, what I mean, overall, what do you find, I don't know, captivating in this game? What do you think?
I actually do enjoy trick taking games. They are fun for the most part, unless we're playing bridge, in which case
no bridge.
I'd rather eat dirt, but there's an element of chaos that comes with this particular game, both controlled and just complete uncontrolled chaos, because you are getting to decide your colors. And so you have this grand plan at the beginning of each hand of like, oh, I'm going to do this, and then I'm going to do this, and it's going to be great. And then by the second card played, you're like, nope, this is going to crap. And it's just this constant, each round, you're just constantly trying to change your tactics to make it work to get your bid. And I like the shifting as you, because, you know, you can start by being like, okay, I'm going to go this way and this is how I'm going to get it. Like, because that's what you normally do in spades, right? You look at your hand and you're usually able to be like, okay, this one, and this one, those are going to potentially hit. So do I risk it and try to go for three, or do I play it safe and slough the other ones? But in this game, it's like, okay, I think that my two eights are going to do it. But then this one down here could also be the one that saves me, depending on how I play it. And mm-hmm. So it opens up all these different possibilities because you're choosing your suit as you go. And I really enjoy that particular aspect of the game. What about you?
Yeah, so I guess I'll go over what I don't like about trick-taking games. So trick-taking games for me is I don't like the randomness of the hand. And this does have randomness because you have, you know, the numbers, but you can control it a little bit, obviously, because it's not just all in one color. And then, you know, it's so weird because in a normal trick-taking game, you're like, okay, if red is trump, oh, I didn't get any reds, so it's going to be really hard for me to win a trick. In this, that's not necessarily correct, like true at all. You could win six tricks because red is determinant on whenever somebody decides to play into it, and any number can be played. It's not like I have to have the red card. And I love the fact that there's not colors on the cards. Like, it's just a board that's saying, you're saying what color that card is, and you can only do it so many times. But it's just such a different way to do a trick taking game, where normally the colors and the cards have colors, and there's a trump color. So it just, and yeah, the mind games that you end up playing, because you're like, okay, well, I have the six here, but I know, you know, I know they don't want to win any more tricks, but I don't want to play into red now, so let me just go into blue. If they beat me, that's fine. Then you end up winning the trick because, you know, they don't want to win another one, or everybody wants to play through their blue cards right now. It's just, it's interesting, dude. It's such a unique, fascinating game. And then I love the tokens. All the little tokens have different shapes and different little symbols on them, and they all fit inside the box, but the little tokens, the player tokens, are all unique. And then on top of that, like the betting board, it's so you have like this little board. And so you put the little tokens on there and it shows what colors you currently have in hand. And so when you say you're out of a color, you remove that token off. So let's say I think that there's red, yellow, green, and blue on the board. And there's like a little slot for it, for your token. And so when you say, okay, well, we're playing into green, he started in green, but I'm out of green, you remove that token from the board, and then you play into another color, either the trump color or whatever color you want to play into. And so it's just so different in a good way. It's refreshing. And again, it brings out the parts that I enjoy about a trick-taking game, is kind of analyzing what the board state is and how many tricks I want to win. But it's still, in essence, you're just playing cards and picking numbers. So it's simple, yet it has a lot of deep decision-making, which is a lot of fun because you can really mess with some other people because you know, basically, like, and I think I did this to you a couple times where basically, like, you said you were out of yellow, and so I just went back into yellow, forcing you to either keep winning tricks, even though you only said you were going to win one, and so then do you try and win more there, or do I play into a different color because I said I was only going to win one trick? So it's very fun, a very fun game.
Yeah, I agree. Some of the other things strategy-wise that I really enjoy about this one. So at the beginning of the game, at the beginning of each round, you get to slough a card, discard it after you've kind of looked at your hand and made an assessment of how you want to play. And that tied in with the fact that there's five of each number. Adds a unique element that most trick-taking games don't have, because there's more of a number than there are spaces to play it, which adds this weird tension of do I keep these three high numbers and try and run the table? Or am I risking causing a paradox because they have already, because other people have these numbers too, and they're going to dive in early.
Yeah.
And, you know, at the same time, you don't play your hand out like you do in spades or hearts. Like there's that one card left over. So you've got a lot of wiggle room to be creative in how you decide to go about your game. And I will say, for me, I always lean more towards tactics than overall strategy. I like that changing on the fly and being able to adapt to the situation. So this all of that speaks to me really well. And if you're more of a, I want to plan it all out at the beginning and then watch it play itself out, I don't know if this is really going to speak to you as well, just because there is so much chaos that happens in any given round.
So normal trick-taking games, it feels like, and I haven't played enough hearts and stuff. I know there's ways to like win, but normally it's like, man, this guy's winning a lot of tricks. Like, they're probably going to win. But in this game, if you paradox, you get the negative points, one. On top of that, I've seen, and he almost pulled it out because I was winning by like five and we're going into the last round. So I'm like, I just need to win a couple tricks. Don't paradox. We're good. Well, he was behind by five plus, you know, whatever I was winning in tricks that round. But he basically like didn't even try to win any tricks. And what he lined up, this is where it was crazy. He lined up. So how many, do you remember how many cards you get?
Yeah, so it's 30 cards, and you're always getting 10 unless you're in a five-player game.
Okay, so then you would play eight of them because you get rid of one and you keep one. So anyway, so he played all of his eight cards the way, because he didn't have any high cards, but the way he placed them on the board, all of them were connecting. But then at the very one of the last rounds, he was saving up one of his high cards to try and win the trick. And I got ahead of him somehow, or I played into the other color. And so I basically kept him from winning. He said he was going to win one trick, but he would have scored like 8 points because all of his connected and he would have beat me. But I just bit it. But that's the thing about this game. You could be behind. And as long as if you could go for the, you know, shoot the moon and get all your little pieces to line up, and then you bet, even if you get the one, you could score, you know, that's 9 points if you win the trick plus get all of your things in line. And so it's a really crazy way. Like, there's nobody truly out of it if they line up all their pieces right and then win the trick and then also get the bet right. Like, you might, you know, you could be winning every round, but if somebody does that, then you're never out of it. So it's such a unique way. And plus, like, you get negative points for causing the paradox. So just so different in its own way, and it just keeps things, like you said that earlier, the tension at the board is very interesting because you're holding your hand and you're like, please don't play the six. Please don't play the six. Please don't play the six. I did that so many times. I'm like, I have a three, a two, and a four, and the four is covered up. So I have a two and a three, and you're like, please don't both players play into the two and the three, two and the three, and then somebody plays into your two, and you're like, please don't play the three. Please don't play the three. Please don't play the three.
It is really interesting, right, how, like, you think that you can get down to those two cards and just be like, okay, I've got a fail safe at that point, but I feel like I've already decided which card I have to hold on to. With like four cards left, I'm like, this is the one I have to keep. And everything else, we're just going to hopefully get on the board.
Right. I agree. Yeah, true. Yeah, it gets very stressful towards the end. The last two rounds are pretty wild every time because it's like everybody's just trying. Basically, you're just playing whatever you can. Most players only have one or two cards out of the four that they can even play. So they're just sitting there like, okay, well, I don't have a choice. And then they take your spot and then it's all over.
Yeah, for sure. What do you think about the artwork in this one?
It's fantastic. I love it. I love, again, we talked about that kind of like, it's kind of creepy, but funny and light and then, and, you know, creative. It's just got this, it's got a cat on it, but it's like this kind of cute cat. But then again, the whole experimenting thing is weird. And then the cards are all black. So it's kind of like, it's just kind of dark, like on the cards. The cards are like, not like dark and creepy, but the cards are just dark. It's a dark tone. And so it's just different, but I like it.
I really like the structure of the components. So the recessed spaces for each cube, so they don't get bounced all over the place.
Amazing.
The different ways to hold the icons for your bid and for each of the four colors to signify what players still have available. It's all very clear and clean and well done from that aspect. So yeah, I definitely agree with that as well. Really happy with the way that this one came out on that front. What's something that's lacking for you in this game?
There's still, because it's a card game, you can't control everything. Like sometimes it just is what it is. I do feel like you can control more in my mind. Personally, I feel like I have more control over how my game is in this than I would in a normal trick taking, but it's still cards. If somebody gets all the eights, like it's gonna be hard to win tricks. So eights, whatever the highest card in that game is, it depends on how many players you're playing. But if somebody else gets them all, you don't get one, then it is what it is. But you're never out of it, because you can always score points. But again, it just kind of depends on what you're handed too. So that is the problem there. So that's always an issue with card games, is like, it is what you're given as far as hand wise. Besides that, overall, it's a quick game. I feel like if everybody knows what they're doing, you can play this game in like 10, 15 minutes, it feels like. So it doesn't have a lot of depth in that regard, but you can knock it out, play a game or two, and then honestly move on to something else. But this is a phenomenal game as far as that goes. Like, you can just knock it out. So that's why I do enjoy it. But yeah, it's not something I would sit around and play for an entire evening. It's not my vibe.
No, and I think if you like trick-taking games, it would be very easy to sit here and play this one for a while. It's very addicting, especially when you get towards the end of the game. You're like, man, if I could have done a couple things differently, then the score might look really different. But so then that way, it really pulls you back in. I don't really have anything from this game that really says I'm not happy with this. Again, as someone who likes trick-taking games, I think this one's really fresh. And yeah, it brings a new element to the game that is not just some gimmick, but actually adds a aspect of the game that makes it very enjoyable, makes it approachable, but also adds some complexity at the same time, which is kind of interesting to the trick-taking genre, which I really like. So, yeah, I don't really have any detractors for this one. Anything else that you want to cover before we I guess you're kind of giving final thoughts by asking that, but grading, grading and final thoughts, Ian.
Yeah. Well, I held my emotions in check until now. So I really like this game though. I really do. Again, I'm not a big fan of trick takes, but this one's my favorite. I don't think I've had another one that I like more than this. I like the aspect of the little tokens on the board, that the cards don't actually have colors. You're just claiming what they are, and you can control a lot more. Like, there's just way more control to me, is I can decide when I'm going to play a trump card. And depending on the table that you're playing with, sometimes like everybody just run up the trump cards real quick. But sometimes it sits around and you can hop in there when you want to win one. And it's just a unique and different way to play a type of card game like this. And I think it's so neat and so well designed and thought through. I would say, man, for what this game is and what it does and how the ease of access to this game to me, I'm going to give this an 8 out of 10. I really, really, really like this game.
Nice.
Because I can tell, like, most people have played something like Hearts or Spades or something like that. Or if not, like, they're just like, the highest card wins until you play a trump card. Like, that's really easy. It's easy to teach. The strategy within this, there's a lot more. But in general, it's like, highest card wins. And so it's just so easy to kind of teach and get start playing this game. And you can play a couple rounds, and I'm not bored at all. Like, we, like you were saying, you say, yeah, you wouldn't play it all night, and I said that, but when we were, when we found out about this game, we found out this game at Funk K-Town, and they had Bezier was there to teach us, and it was awesome, and I was immediately hooked. And again, I don't know necessarily why. It's like I think that what, that's part of what you were saying is like you just kind of get captivated towards the end of the game. You're like, man, that was fascinating how that last round went, and that cost me the game. And then you're like, okay, well, let's play again. And so I feel like we played this game more than I thought I ever would at that event, and then I've played it more and more than I thought I would beyond that. So I don't know. It's crazy where the game's just kind of sucking me in, and it's in a good way because I'm having fun. And it's just doing something that a lot of other games aren't doing, and it's so easy to teach and get people to just play through some rounds, and it's just so easy. And I for a game that's doing that, and a game that's light and fun and easy to teach, I mean, I would say, yeah, an 8 out of 10. I would give it higher, but I'm going to refrain. I got to keep my everything in check here. An 8 out of 10 is a very good score, and it deserves it.
Oh, for someone who doesn't even like the genre, and you bought it like on site, like I don't want to.
I bought card sleeves for it too. I sleeved it.
Man, what a time!
Yeah.
So I think you covered it pretty well. I think we've kind of covered most of what we want to say here. I'll add one thing, just as I've been kind of looking over the game while you were talking. You know, another little artwork thing that I really like, and it's so small and simple, but I really like it, is on each of the cards in the middle, it's not too big to be in the way, but it tells you the player count and when it's applicable.
Yeah.
So you don't have to go back searching through the rules to break out the cards. I mean, you can, but you also have it right there.
So it's a nice little add.
Which, yes. I wish more games would do well.
Oh, if only, yes, they should.
Because I feel like a lot of times when I break out a game that I haven't played in a while, I'm like, okay, I remember how to play this game, but I have to go through the setup again because I don't remember what you take out and what you keep in and blah, blah, blah. But this is right there. So I really appreciate that little tidbit as well. And there are two sides of the board that you can play on. So you can change that up a little bit as well, which is nice. With all that said, I feel like I'm going to give this an unfair rating because I think if I did not know about a trick-taking game that's coming out in August.
Oh, Jared.
I would give this game a 9. But I am so excited to try Rebel Princess, which is also by Bezier.
Yeah.
And I am my expectations, as you can see, are high for Rebel Princess.
Yeah.
I'm going to give Cat in the Box an 8.5.
There you go.
And we're going to take it. So we're recording this on Saturday, May 11th. I am going to take this to Mother's Day tomorrow, and we're going to see how Anna's family takes to it. And it's going to be very interesting. I think they're going to like it. That could even bump it up a little bit more because I think you can take it to people who don't. They play games, but they're not playing games all the time. And their trick-taking thing is very sacred. They love their bridge. I don't know why, but they do.
Right.
And so if we can get this one in, it'll be a big win. So we'll see. We'll see.
Okay.
But I think it sits solidly at an 8.5. I would give it the 9 slot, but I'm reserving that for Rebel Princess in hopes that Rebel Princess is everything that I expect it to be. And so we'll see. But still very solid. Happy to play this one. Again, as someone who likes trick-taking games, I really like what this one brings, and it has a space on the shelf because of its uniqueness.
For sure. Yeah, I agree. And now Rebel Princess sounds like a really fun game. There's some definitely plenty of other trick-taking games from Bezier and even ones that are coming out. But yeah, I think that one will also have its own place because of the way it plays. I think this one with the whole paradox thing and... I think it just does it different for me that I can safely say that this one will stay on the shelf even if I like one of the other trick-taking games because it just does it in its own way, which is cool.
I think you're probably right, but I have no doubt if and when we review Rebel Princess in the Q4 of this year, we'll bring this game back up because we'll be comparing the two.
Yeah,
especially
for sure.
With them both being from Bezier.
Yeah, no, I'm curious. So stay tuned.
So, all right, well, dear listener, thank you for staying tuned in this episode to this point, if you have, or for the amount of tuning that you did in this episode. If you have feedback or want to give us your thoughts on the game, we would love to hear from you. Links to our socials are in the description. If you don't like socials, I get it. Head on over to our website at thegametablepodcast.com or shoot us an email at thegametablepodcast@gmail.com or find us on BoardGameGeek.
Also, we have a website.
I just said that.
We have a website.
Oh my gosh. You don't listen to anything I say.
I will say, also follow us on Instagram.
Go ahead, Ian. Where's our website?
That's... Follow us on Instagram.
Where's the website, Ian?
Or follow us on TikTok for as long as TikTok is now on. Who knows?
Holy crap.
It might be banned.
Yes.
But follow us on TikTok until the day that TikTok is banned. And in 5 years when this episode is still here, you don't even know what TikTok is, and that's fine.
Well, if that were true, the world would be a very different place. I don't think it's true, though.
Also, we have a website.
Where is our website, Ian?
TheGameTablePodcast.com.
Thank you. 5-star reviews, subscribing to your podcast player of choice, following us on socials, if that's your thing, and joining the conversation on Discord. All of these heroic actions are immensely helpful in growing this podcast. Special thanks to Angie Santiago for our cover art, and to Anna Snyder, who made the music. Join us next week as Faith and I discuss Rubik's Race at the kids' table. In the meantime, may your dice rolls and your card draws be blessed, and your experiences at the table be ones to remember forever.
We have a website. Follow us on our website, please. Repeat. We have a website. TheGameTablePodcast.com.
Ayo.
Thank you.
Good night, everybody.